Welcome, sports fans. Welcome, sports fans. This week's edition of the Windmill Sports Show coming to you live from the Club Count Evo on ESPN 94.5 FM. I'm your host, Kenny B, here with Josh Nagel from Sportsline.
Ken?
Josh?
How's your Friday?
Good. Not bad.
Good. Just checking out these overnights for college basketball. I know the sportsbook doesn't have the whole printed sheets yet, so we've got like this huge receipt-looking document to go through, but all the games are out, so we've got spreads to talk about.
And there are some. I have some totals, too, so I know we're going to talk a little bit about the Nevada game tomorrow, big game versus Fresno State. You know, we have the side, what the side's going to open up at, and we also have an I know what the total is going to be, so we'll share that with everybody else. John the Hawk Stevens, independent handicapper.
Yo.
What's going on? Wearing your Steelers garb today and your USA hat.
That's both very American situations.
And drinking 805s. Firestone Walkers, right?
That's right. California.
All right. There you go. So with that being said.
Something good came out of California.
So we were just talking to our board guys right before we came on, and we posted it on our Facebook page. So if you're interested, you know, I guess kind of the big news today on a couple of accounts, you know, the owner of the New England Patriots, Robert Kraft, was caught in a solicitation of prostitution in Florida. So, we posted that on our Facebook page at Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. And they actually, it's just coming out now, some of the pictures of the prostitutes. Why? I want him to go and look at the prostitutes.
Okay.
It's on our Facebook page at Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. It's newsworthy.
Yeah.
So, with that being said, and I guess I'm going to get your guys' opinions real quick, but what's coming out now is that he's not even the most high-profile figure that might be brought up in this sting or this.
Really?
So.
Wasn't it just a rub and tug?
You tell me not to really. I'm not sure if you can say that, John.
Sure
wow.
Can. What's wrong with that?
Josh?
Well, Ken, it's one of those things. Kraft, of course, as a benefits, it's the opposite of that. It's poor timing. It's kind of a slow news cycle, right? So now this has been the biggest headline in every sports show today, radio, TV, and otherwise. It just happened where the NBA is just firing up from the All-Star break, and it's kind of a dead period, and this comes out. I mean, otherwise, I think it makes some headlines, but it wouldn't be the top story. Overall, again, like you said, I'm curious to see what the other big names are. It's interesting when you see like this, sometimes when some of those cheating websites, the names came out, there's famous celebrities on there, and you're curious about who else is involved. But by and large, and as far as the NFL and the optics are concerned, they have that code of conduct that the owners are a part of, so it'll probably get some sort of reprimand in that. By and large, it's a misdemeanor. You know, it is what it is. Soliciting prostitution is not much worse than a traffic ticket. They said it's got two counts. It's one of those things, right? 5 minutes with the DA. Okay, we'll knock it out. No, you get community service, $500, and go on your way.
Or no community service, and I'll donate $50,000 to your favorite charity.
Exactly. So nothing's going to happen to him. It's not like this huge scandal. Is it embarrassing? Of course it comes out. But it's just one of those things. But, Ken, you might appreciate this. One thing I kind of came to mind when this news broke today. You remember a few years back, Greg Raymer got busted. That
yes.
World Series of Poker champion,
yeah.
Greg Raymer, Wake Forest,
Fossil
North Carolina,
man.
His hometown at a, whatever, Hyatt Regency. There was a hotel there where that was going on. He got busted. It was news in the poker circle for a few days. That calmed down, too. But what was funny is, poker players, I mean, they cheat each other out of money all the time. I mean, there's all kinds of, low-down things going on in the poker community with not-so-savory characters. Raymer was vilified. I mean, some of the people that went after him on Twitter and otherwise. And I remember, the first interview he did coming out of that, he said, I was really surprised at the amount of hostility and, villain, I was painted to be. It's like, the only person I really owe an apology to is my wife. He's like, the biggest thing, I broke her trust, and now I have to face her judgment and have to rebuild that. He's like, so it was wrong on that front. He goes, otherwise, he goes, legally, it was not that big of a deal, and it's nobody's business. He was surprised at just the vitriol that came at him. And so right inside, of course, that thing kind of died down, but I did think there was a little bit of hypocrisy on the, poker players' part. So when you realize, the amount, the degree to which those people rip each other off regularly, and some of the seedy stuff, the business deals were designed to rip people off. And this guy got, a quasi-traffic ticket for prostitution. No one talks about that anymore, and Raymer's back playing all the time. So this Kraft thing, it'll pass the news cycle pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, everyone is just looking to tear the Patriots down.
Of course.
I'm all for that, but it's, let's not make it bigger. Oh, I saw some whispers of, human trafficking and stuff involved in that, but
they retracted
those. A lot of speculation.
This guy really, as much money as he has, he's going to be human trafficking.
Yeah. Well, Ken, they're saying that the parlor that was the subject of the sting might be involved in that, which would be a bigger deal. But I agree with you. There's a certain degree, too, where media outlets, everyone else has to keep tabs on how they word certain things. But you keep mentioning his name with human trafficking. It's like the guy's not charged with that. You know what I mean? It's like, ridiculous. The place that owns the parlor or whatever, the CD operation, they might have been involved in that. When people start reporting the story and keep linking him directly to it, he's got at some point, he's got a case for defamation if people keep doing
this. And he's got enough money to hire attorneys to pursue that.
You should open a massage place called the Barler Parlor.
The Barler Parlor. Yeah.
Or a pizza place, I guess. Yeah. Or both. You could do both.
Kim Barler's Pizza Parlor.
Pizza and massages.
There you go. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
We're getting ready to put pizza at Sirius Casino downtown.
Is that right?
That's right. So it's really good. So
I'm still waiting for you to put a Waffle House in here.
Man. I tell you what, Waffle House. Yeah, go. I know, I agree. But Josh, go back to what you said, and John, you can get included in this too. You know, I've played at the World Series. I go down there every year, and I've kind of, I've played, pretty high limit games and high limit tournaments, and I've kind of encountered these guys. You know, I wouldn't say hung out with them so much as but been around them. You know, I've been on some poker cruises, the Party Poker Millions, did that multiple occasions, and when you're on a ship, you tend to tends to end up in the same areas partying, and you kind of see what's going on. And you're right, Josh. I mean, the poker world is a dirty business. There is a lot of – I mean, look at Stu Unger. I mean, him dying broke. Look at Gavin Smith, who just passed away. Same thing, And there's so many drugs involved in it and so many, like you said, thievery.
Right.
And collusion, and just, soft playing, teaming up, some of these biggest poker games in the world, you have, a table of eight people, nine people, depending on how many they want to play, six of them are playing out of the bankroll, and they're just waiting for, you see rounders, they kind of talk about that, show that a little bit at rounders when they're in Atlantic City, and the tourists just kept coming in. And they just kept fleecing the tournament, the tourists. They're not trying to get into wars with each other, but they're sure going. They're going to soft play each other, but they're dang sure going to take their tourist money. And it is. You're right, Josh. And it kind of brought back a lot of memories. A lot of stories that I have from back when I was younger and I was traveling around and playing in those tournaments and going on cruise ships and going to Vegas and playing and games I probably shouldn't be playing in. So.
You know what they say, Ken, too, and it's a good general word of advice, because you're right, especially if you do the tournament thing, after a while you'll meet some people, some who, if they like how you play or whatever, might offer to back you. But still, rule of thumb is, don't loan money to anybody and don't borrow it either. Yeah. And you can keep out of trouble that way. But if you go, like I said, there's a lot of online forums. People talk about, what's happening with particular players. It's kind of funny how long people can be kind of deadbeats on their loans before other people get upset. There's a certain trust baseline that's the least established. When people really start just welching on their loans or whatever, it comes out. Like, the high stakes player, you can just say his name, Eli Lezra, who he is. Mm-hmm. He used to be on high stakes poker. The guy was a millionaire, owned a ton of Vegas businesses, had a huge mansion. I saw in a video once. It's apparently either up for sale or he's already sold. I mean, word on the street has it. This guy's just broke to the core. He was at the Peppermill running that plane and $500 by it. Shows you. The guy was playing with $1 million on the table, high stakes 10 years ago. But some people finally came out and said, this guy, I loaned him $50,000 and at the Bellagio or whatever. He's paid me back, $20 of it.
Yeah.
He doesn't pay back his loans. But, Ken, have you heard some of the other scams that are out there? People will sell pieces of themselves, right?
Sure. So that's the big thing now.
I want to play main event, whatever, but I can't afford it. But you think I'm a pretty good player. You might give me $5,000, whatever. You might take a percentage of me, or I'm trying to get 50% of it covered through other means, selling 10% of myself. And then if you win, maybe I'll give you plus $120 on the dollar or whatever. Those deals happen all the time. But, Ken, have you heard of a somewhat popular scam? I don't know if it's as widespread anymore.
Okay,
people selling more of themselves than available, than busting out on purpose.
Yeah, there's actually a website where you can do that, where people, you can sell off pieces. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it's called, but there is. But go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's a dignified way to do it. Phil Helmuth, all those players, none of them pay their own way into it. I mean, all of them have backers and stuff. But it was the going scam for a while, especially when someone who's down on their luck but generally considered a decent tournament player. Let's say they won main event or some other tournament, $10,000 buy-in. They would sell $20,000 worth of themselves, bust out on purpose, and pocket the $10,000.
Yeah.
Now, how this came to light is there are times where people did that, tried to bust out, but couldn't.
Yeah,
they pushed all in with nine deuces and the cracked aces, whatever. There's a famous story a few years ago. I think a guy from Britain did that, where he sold 200% of himself and was trying to bust out. Instead, won the tournament, and there's people he owed more in percentage fees than he had prize money. But you've also heard crazy stories of other And you can just go online and find all this. But I've actually seen it happen, too. Other people that had so much money out in various loans they never repaid, but suddenly they hit the big tournament score. Like, they won some sort of event, whatever, WPT. Say they won an event, though, where they're getting $300,000, $400,000, and people have been burned serious debts in the past. People are just lining up at the cage waiting for the guy when he cashes out. And he may leave with less than his tournament winnings and then some that he owes. So, like you said, to me, it's kind of funny. And then so you get a guy, misdemeanor prostitution charge, and they judge him when all that other stuff's going on.
I know. It's interesting. And I remember when he won that event, he didn't have a lot of respect at that point, too. So I think it's kind of like a comeuppance to the pros that didn't respect his game and, had
yeah, Greg Raymer?
Yeah.
You mean? And which, by the way, of those of the kind of moneymaker era champions, he's been by far the most successful moving on. Because, he was 04 after moneymaker in 03.
Yeah.
And Greg Raymer's just, he's continued, to this day, he goes pretty deep.
Is Jamie Gold even
Jamie
playing
Gold.
Anymore?
He's starting to hit back the scene. But, just a couple of years ago, Raymer was on such a run. You know, like, can they have that Heartland Poker Tour, Midwest type of tour? That's sort of a poor man's WPT.
Yeah.
At one point, a few years back, he's actually interviewed Raymer. He's a nice guy. I interviewed him when
he
was
always
playing
has
in town.
He
won four Heartland tournaments in a row a couple years ago.
He always has a booth set up at the World Series of Poker. You know, if you ever go to the World Series of Poker, you walk into the Rio down there below it. They always have the booths and the advertisement and the media and all that stuff. And Raymer always has a booth there, and he's very approachable.
Yeah, he's kept up with the
right
times
there.
Too, with all the kids and the GTO theory and all that. And he still regularly has real solid results. So he was far from you mentioned the Flash and the band's kind of one hit wonders. The Jamie Gold is kind of funny. I mean, they said they were a while ago he was helping some Florida card room get up and going by lending his name to it, whatever. He's actually been spotted in big tournaments lately, but he'd been away from the scene. Jerry Yang, same thing, just went broke after winning it all.
John and Josh, I mean, just think about this on the scale of things. Think about when this poker boom started and you had a moneymaker. And think about all the, the Joe Caddas. Think about the Dannemans. Think about man, all those guys back then.
Joe Hashem.
Joe Hashem still
plays. By the way, he's great, too.
He's a great guy.
Hashem and Raymer, by the way, are both great players. So if you want to judge it, like how well they played when they won it or what they've done since, you could kind of have both criteria. But if it's what they've done since, as both Hashem and Raymer have proven to be great players.
I remember Denman saying he was the fourth best player at his home
game.
Yeah.
I have a story about him. I have three stories. Well, real quick, I had dinner with Joe Hashem on the Party Poker Million. It comes with assigned seating. It was the captain's dinner, I think is what they called it. So you had assigned seating, and I sat right next to Joe Hashem, and we drank wine, and because he's a gentleman, and
he totally is
outstanding. Love the guy. That's the only encounter I've ever had with him, but I can honestly say that he's a fantastic guy. Daniel Negreanu, two stories about Daniel real quick. We were playing in the poker room, and if you've ever been on a cruise, it's all inclusive except the booze. So
what good is that?
Not only that, John, this $2.50 501 that you drink here at the Club Caliva,
$4
501s, it's probably $12 on the cruise ship. So Daniel was such a nice guy, he went and found an ice chest and filled it up with beer and let everybody drink it for free on his dime.
That's awesome.
Now, you always say there's kind of a he's trying to get everybody drunk.
He's got a lot of Eddie Haskell in him.
But he's playing. I mean, he's drinking. Daniel was drinking back then. He was drinking back then.
He still does now and then, just not much. He's a vegan Cleveland guy. He'll still have a beer now and then. But, again, just to your point, though, by the way, Joe Hashem, because he's also one I've interviewed. I used to do a lot of the poker media stuff, like you mentioned, World Series. I've been down there a lot. But in terms of ambassadors, aside from Moneymaker himself, Hashem is the guy in terms of just being a dignified, classy guy who treats everyone with respect. He's one of those who I think it's underrated in terms of the reach he's had and the influence. But because not only did he have that moneymaker effect in Australia, but you're right, the times I've encountered him, you won't meet a classier guy, and you'll never see a tournament or anything else where he's never berating other players and he's got a great attitude. He's been huge for the game.
Real quick, just to touch on one of my friends is listening, and the website. If you're curious about these interactions of big tournaments poker, it's called youstake.com. YOUSTAKE. youstake.com, and it's where these players go in there and sell off pieces of themselves. It's interesting. So if you look at that, the second story, going back to loan and money. How much time we got? Going back to loan and money, I read an article Daniel Negreanu wrote about loaning money, and he says that he's loaned more money in his life and been stiffed on than he can even cares to imagine about. But he said, he kind of looks at it like, I only loan money if I don't, like everybody says, I only loan money if I expect not to get it back. if I expect not to get it back. And he said, and I never get mad about it. He goes, because in the grand scheme of things, when I give somebody my hard-earned cash, it's my fault. He goes, it's my fault that I made a bad judgment, not that person's fault. He goes, and you pretty much know the outcome of the transaction when you're handing the guy over the cash.
And he's talking $100,000.
He's talking big money. Yeah, he says he's got millions of dollars loaned out that he'll probably never. I've encountered Negreanu multiple times. Uh-huh. I've played against him. I've sat with him. I've talked to him. You know, and I'm not bragging or anything because he doesn't know me from God. You know, uh-huh. Everybody knows him. Yeah. But I mean, he really is where he's at because he truly is a nice guy. He is an ambassador.
I still don't
of poker.
Trust him.
No, he's no. Well, in a right way, he's going to look at you. Yeah. He's going to look at you and smile and check raise you. No doubt about it.
I couldn't imagine how nervous I'd be sitting across the table.
Oh, it's intimidating. Eric Daneman, I'm playing a big tournament in Vegas right after the World Series of Poker. Uh-huh. We were playing at the $1,500 buy-in at one of the other casinos. Daneman had just come off of the World Series, and I beat him in a hand. He tried to bluff me, and I called him down with ace king, and I won a big pot tournament, and my phone was ringing the whole time during the hand, and like you said, John, so intimidated, yeah. I don't even dare look at my phone. Yeah. I mean, I'm just sitting there. So as soon as I rake the chips, I pull my phone out, and I'm looking at it, and he just starts berating me. He goes, "Oh, you never beat a pro. Now you got to call all your friends and brag that you beat Dan." And I'm like going, "No, I'm like, I didn't know what to say."
Yeah. Steve Daneman, you mean the second place?
Yeah, Daneman.
Yeah, it's kind
yeah.
of funny though. There's the irony. Of
I
that.
Keep saying so, Eric, but Steve Daneman.
Okay,
yeah.
But they caught him on video bluffing Howard Lederer once. He did like threw a parade for himself during yeah. the break. Talk about what a
great play,
Howard
right.
Lederer.
Yeah, no. Daneman versus Lederer.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the show did when before the preliminaries before he made the final table. He checked raised Lederer once with air, got it through, and then they showed him on the rail just basically throwing a parade for himself,
patting himself on the back
for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So he's not the type, the one who should.
So
be
that's my bad. That's my bad story about Daneman. So I mean, just I just but that's the only counter I've ever had with him.
By the way, I agree on the Negreanu front, but do you realize what kind of a polarizing figure he's become?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's too bad. Well, in some ways. I put it this way, kid. I think and he has no problem. He doesn't need me or anyone else to defend him. But to me, it's kind of ridiculous. The guy's an absolute icon. Some of these young punks who come up say, "Oh, he's over the hill, doesn't know it. Oh, he's a sellout because he stays with poker stars." And like, or kids like Justin Bonham, I feel like it's kind of funny because someone like Doyle Brunson, they seem to want to pay the respects to, but Negreanu, they're just like kind of scoff like he's yesterday's news. All those kids owe him a debt of gratitude like no other. Because once people jumped in because of Moneymaker, Negreanu was the guy they kind of latched onto. And I just think it's ridiculous some of the way he gets treated these days.
So let's hold off on this because when we come back, I have two stories. One about borrowing money, both involving me, and lending money. And one of them is to a world champion. So we'll hold this, and I'll tell these stories, and they're fun. Josh, you always say people love when we start talking poker, and we never really script
plan
it. And here it is. So when we come back, I'm going to tell two poker stories.
Talk about?
Yeah, I'm going to tell two poker stories when we come back and on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show. I'm your host, Kenny B, here with John the Hawk Stevens and Josh Nagel from Sportsline. Kind of a the whole first segment, we kind of got off into a little poker tangent, so let's – a couple more stories. I want to expand on a couple things, and I got a couple quick stories. But talk about Daniel Negreanu. I watch a lot of his podcasts, and the game has changed from when I first started playing, along a lot of – in Jesus – 86, 87, you grow up with Doyle Brunson, super system, and his take on that. And then you kind of get TJ Cloutier after he had Championship No Limit Hold'em, the book, the blue book.
He was great, by the way. He partnered with Tom McAvoy, still some of the best basic info out there.
Yeah, Tom McAvoy. He used to play here. I used to play Tom up here at the Cal Neva all
the
time.
By the way, McAvoy, I think, wrote the parts about hand selection and stuff because it's kind of a running joke that TJ doesn't play like he teaches. His name's on the book. It's McAvoy who's the tight one.
Yeah, no, that, no
it's
doubt
true.
About that. No,
believe me.
It's true. It's damn true.
Yeah.
So John loved that. But with that being said, and talking about the way game has changed from now. Back then it was passive aggressive, great hand selection, and then when you got a hand, you play it hard. And you be patient. These kids today have, they have hand charts, range charts, EV charts, and the game has totally changed. Daniel Negreanu is actually taking it upon himself to adapt with the times. He talks about that in all of his blogs. He hired a poker coach a couple of years ago to try to figure out what was getting in these kids' head.
Right.
And which is amazing because a lot of these guys, you get so married in the way that you play, and you have to reprogram everything. You're three betting on the flop. You're float in the river, or float in the turn, float in the flop, things like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And he's made the adaption to that, Josh. Yeah. And going back to what you're saying about, you know, these guys owe him gratitude, they do. Oh, I absolutely agree.
But Ken, by the way, and you're right, his transformation's been crazy. Because, you know, a few years ago, and how – like you mentioned, the game just goes in stages of how primarily it's paid. At the super high stakes level now, the big things, the whole GTO, Game Theory Optimal. I watch all these guys, I call them, they call GTO bots, the ones who just sit there, they look half dead wearing their hoodies. And some of it I think is bad for the game. And I understand, you know, the game theory, you know, part of poker, but especially the circles he runs, and he had to learn it. But, you know, a few years ago, his general concept, small ball, was all the rage.
Yes.
Then it evolved into... the GTO thing. But Negreanu himself, you know how he's known for being so cheerful and happy at the table. If you follow his video blog or whatever your literature you read with him or on Twitter or all the above, you realize not only did he change all that, but when he's down in the, you know, Poker Stars, you know, PCA Championship or a high-stakes thing, he no longer does it. I mean, he's like stiff as a statue. He doesn't talk to anybody. Doesn't smile. He says, you know what? I think I must have been giving something away. And you're right. He's dead serious, so he doesn't engage anymore. And doesn't talk, chat during the hand, or try to verbally bluff anybody. And you're right, he's adapted to that, the principles of GTO and all that, and he's still kind of, you know, maintaining his small ball style. But you're right, he wants to, and for a guy in his, you know, mid-40s now, taking on all the young guns who, you know, say, oh, he's over the hill or whatnot. You know, he was the first guy to ever win a championship on ESPN, where he beat, you know, John Bonetti, who's, you know, since passed and all that. And he's a guy who's withstood the test of time. There aren't many of them. He has. His results are still great. Eric Seidel is another one.
Yep.
Who, you talk about, you know, the old school guys who somehow kept with the times. You know, Seidel was winning everything in sight just a couple of years ago. So he's one of them.
What's Ivy up to?
And, well, Ivy's dodging the feds after, or dodging the casino garnishment of his wages.
And the he had that big issue with a biased wheel in
Baccarat.
Edging.
That's the thing. Yeah, he just had another judgment levied against him, and they say he's avoiding that. But another thing, Ken, you got to respect about Negreanu, because with the whole poker craze, which still exists, there's still some, you know, hero worship type of thing if you're down at the WSOP or anywhere all these guys are. And I've seen this. You can see it happen in person or on his, you know, video blog or whatnot. Negreanu will be down there, you know, in tournaments with $50,000, $100,000 buy-in. He busts out on the bubble, things like that. The Players Championship, $50K. He'll bust out on the bubble. Some huge tournament that he just lost a ton of money in. Walks to the rail, and there's people lining up for selfies, autographs, whatever. And he does all of them.
Yep,
shakes their hand, does every picture. And that's, you know, his... in terms of
his
skill and everything else, that's his inherent value to the game. So the young guns would be well served by learning a little something about how to treat people.
No, I agree. So with that being said, you know, great guy. See, which one of these do I want to – let's tell a Moneymaker story first. Right after Chris Moneymaker won the World Series of Poker, he came down to Boomtown, and they had a little a tournament down there that he hosted. And he was there, obviously. He played the event. So I went and played the event. I won the event, humble brag, with that being said. So,
oh, boy.
Yeah.
Now, Ken, by the way, I remember that event happening because I was going to try to get up there and play, right? Mm-hmm. I remember it was a snowy night, and I ended up working too late. I just couldn't make him like, oh, that's too bad, but it'd be great to go, you know, check it out, meet Moneymaker, whatever. But it was kind of funny because obviously I didn't know you, but I just read about it like the next day or a couple days later as a picture in the paper. I'm like, oh, cool, local guy won it, whatever. Then later, you know, later on I learned it was you. But that was just a cool thing that he came down and played two table, whatever, sit and go at Boomtown.
No. It was a big tournament.
Really? I thought they limited the entries. Oh, okay.
So anyway, so the tournament gets over, you know, I'm so excited, you know, I'm head over heels. And so he's playing live. So, and he'd been playing live for walks. He busted out a little bit earlier. And so he gets stuck in the live game. And so I sit down next to him, and he's short on chips. And we're just talking. He's like, congratulations on winning. Another great guy, nice guy. So the true story is that he's sitting there, and he tries to bluff somebody, and he gets picked off. And he goes, well, I guess I got to go to bed. I go, man, I just got here. Rebuy. He goes, I left all my money up in my room. You know, if I go back up there this late at night, there's no way my wife's letting me come down there. And I go, well, I'll loan you some money. And he goes, he kind of looks at me and he goes, really? I go, yeah. I go, I was fat. I just won the tournament and I took a pretty gangster bankroll with me anyways, just in case. So he said, he goes, yeah, that's fine. He goes, I go, how much do you want? And I don't want to say how much it was. Just a little under five digits is what he wanted. And I go, yeah, that's fine. And he kind of looked at me. I go, but you know, I'm going to have to take that World Series of Poker bracelet as collateral. And he laughed. And he goes, all right. And he handed it to me. And then I put it on, so I gave him the cash. And I'm sitting there. I'm going, you know, that I'm going to have to get my picture taken with this World Series, the poker bracelet. And he goes, I figured it was coming. He goes, come on. So he took pictures. So I have pictures of me and Moneymaker with his World Series, the poker bracelet on. He played for a couple more hours, got up, shoved me the cash, gave him his bracelet back. And it was a great thing.
Ken, that's an awesome story. But you know what? And you're right. He is a great guy. And what people don't realize, too, with him, if you track his career, the trajectory, whatnot. Again, a lot of the young guns give him some degree of respect. It's just like, oh, he's the pioneer of the poker room, whatever. They don't think much of him as a player. As a player, he's evolved tremendously.
Oh,
look at his recent results. He's been kicking butt. He made the finals. Remember the NBC Heads Up poker thing? He made the finals like 2 years ago.
I love that event. I wish they did.
Yeah, NBC. John, I wish that was the greatest thing ever. They canceled it. You know what happened? Black Friday happened. The online poker sites were the main sponsors of that. So when they went away, they didn't have enough money to support. That's why so many shows went away.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful tournament. But, and again, that's a few years back. But even very recently, he's making some high-stakes final tables. And Ken, I recently saw a video. It was crazy. It was about live tells. It was all about Moneymaker. It was about one player he zeroed in on, this hot shot, GTO tournament guy in some tournament overseas or whatever. And they're like, watch, Moneymaker has a tell on this kid and he's going to take him to town. And I still don't know exactly what the tell was, but it was just nuts because this kid was 3-betting him, 4-betting him light with just nothing, just rags. But he was known as hyper-aggressive.
Was he eating Oreos?
No, but there was one but there was a few hands where Moneymaker just snapped him off. But the most impressive one was where he had pocket nines and the kid 4-bet him with like nothing. It was like seriously, like 6-deuce offsuit. The flop and the turn are all face cards. It's queen, king, jack. I mean, you name it. So pocket nines can't beat anything. But now goes down to, does he trust his read? On the turn, Moneymaker checks. Again, the kid just makes a huge bluff, shoves on him. And you realize you can see the cards, but, at the time, Moneymaker can't. Let's talk about trusting your read. Shoves on him where if the guy has, bottom pair, he's got him dead. Turns out, the guy had 6-deuce offsuit. I mean, it just goes to show you, though. I mean, that skill level and trusting your live reads. And there was a time where that main event win was – more or less the only thing he did for – he actually finished second in the WPT event the same year. He had a pretty long drought, but it's hard being him. He had the target on his back. But he's adapted. The bottom line is people disrespect. Moneymaker's no joke. He can really play.
In that main event win that he had, I don't remember the specifics, but the bluff that he had on Sammy Farha was one of the most intense, just gut-wrenching moments I've ever seen.
The thing about that, John, in this moment, let's handicap that hand real quick.
Yeah.
Sammy Farha knew that he was a much better player, so he knew that if he laid that down, he thought that he was going to get to another spot later in the tournament, like where he could take him off.
Yeah.
If it would have been a better player than Moneymaker, Sammy makes the call.
He calls him, yeah.
Yeah. So it kind of in his mind he thought that this. I kind of read an article that he thought that there's no way this kid's making this move against me. No way he's making this move against me. So he said, "Yeah, I'm going to lay it down, and I'm going to wait for another. I'm going to wait for another situation, and I'm going to take this young hot shot off." The situation never came, as you know.
Yeah.
He got grounded down.
Yeah.
But can you know some of the famous stories too?
Great.
Still crazy to this day.
That's what hooked me right there was that exact moment, just the intensity of it.
And then when Moneymaker won the hand,
he's
like,
he breathed for 5 minutes. But can you know some of the background too? Because he said Farha, he's just a well-known
great guy.
Just the way he's looking at him. Has that cigarette that he doesn't smoke, and just the smile that he's giving him,
and
throwing
darts,
and he's sitting there, and just Moneymaker's just a stone. He's just a gargoyle, and he just that was God. I'm gonna go watch
that. Farha was just the perfect foil for a villain
totally,
for that story.
Oh God, totally.
But Ken, they said he was up all night playing Pot Limit Omaha, which Sam Farha's that's his game. That's how he made all his money. So they said he stumbled into that final table that heads up with Moneymaker, just on zero sleep. He's just dying, whatever. But they said before the match gets going that they go
to the restroom.
Right, you've heard the story. By the way, Moneymaker at the time had him out chip better than 2-1. Moneymaker offers him an even chop, which is just absolutely absurd. But that's a concession of, hey, well, I know you're the better player. Hey, let's chop this up and get on with our day, play for the bracelet. And Farha turned that down. So he turned down an even chop, a 2-1 chip deficit, said, no, I still think I'm going to outplay you. That ticked, motivated Moneymaker, ticked him off a little bit. Okay, yeah, I'm sure you're aware of it, but the whole, with the game theory optimal and all those strategies that are out there, a lot of popular opinion these days suggested that bluff, would never get through this day and age. I do agree most people would probably call based on the way the game's played now.
But remember the particulars? Do you remember the hand?
I do. I don't have all the cards memorized at the moment, but ultimately he bluffed him off top pair with straight flush draws off the board. The 9 high board and Farha had queen 9. I think Moneymaker had king 8. He missed a gut shot at a flush draw on the river of spades. But Ken, to your greater point, though, with the Farha
he laid down top pair.
With what? Right. Basically, with lots of scary possibilities out there. And so not only did, you know, Farah openly admit he thought he could get him back, but I still think there's an element, too, of in that spot. I think even though he suspected he was bluffing, how worse would it be? Not only, you know, does he think he can get him back later, which he tried and couldn't do, but if somehow he's wrong and he calls off against the guy, after basically telling him you think he's a donkey in the bathroom, telling the world you think how bad he is, you call off when one parent, the guy shows up with the straight or whatever it is. I mean, he wouldn't – put it this way. I mean, he'd have rather been chipped out. I say this because Farhad has so much pride and so much ego, he just couldn't go out like that. Yeah. He just could not let Moneymaker show him the goods.
I got it. Great stuff. Great stuff. And here we are talking about poker. I'll tell you this a quick story, too. When we come back from our break, we're going to talk Wolfpack basketball. We've already going to spend two segments on poker. But there was this gentleman here. I used to run the poker room here at the Club County. We'd had 10 games a day, Omaha, Idaho split. And there's this local grinder. Name's Artie. Great guy. Rest his soul. He came in all the time. All the time. He would say, Ken, can I borrow 200? I need to get in the game. I don't get paid until Friday. I say, sure, Artie. So I give him 200. Friday comes. Here's my 200. This literally went on for 5 years. Literally 5 years. Guy never once missed. If he said he was going to pay me back on Friday, the latest I might have to wait is the check got caught in the mail and he pays me on Monday. But clockwork, this guy paid me off. We're just talking about $200. You know, wanting to play, you know, low limit Omaha, low limit Hold'em.
Oh, by the way, you guys used to have 7-card stud game, which I enjoyed.
Oh, yeah.
I came in and jumped in with the older crowd. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They said Sunday mornings or whatever. It's the only place in town that dealt 7-card stud.
They said that if you could beat that 7-card stud game, you could win the 7-card stud World Series.
That's why I played it.
Anyways, so for like clockwork, Josh and John, this Artie would, for 5 years, would ask to borrow money, and I would give him a couple $100, and he'd pay me back like clockwork. One day I come to work, and Artie's pumped up. And I left my wallet at home, and my girlfriend was going to bring me my money. She's bringing it down, so I said, "Hey, Artie, can I borrow a couple hundred real quick? I'll sit down and swim around in this Omaha game, you know, while I'm waiting for my money." And Artie, in a stone cold look, Josh, looks me right in the face, and he goes, "Oh, Ken, you got this all wrong." He goes, "I'm a borrower, not a lender." I couldn't help but not even be mad. I mean, here I am. I've loaned this guy money for 5 years. I mean, literally hundreds of times, and he's always paid me back. And never once did I never charged him VIG. You know, I never charged him points. You know, and you know what happened the following week, don't you, Josh?
You turned him down?
No. Oh, no, I can't turn him down. He was a nice old guy. But I just laughed.
So what happened the following week?
He asked for $200, and I gave it to him, and he paid me back. But
that's funny.
The stone cold look on his face when he goes, "Oh no, no, King, you got this all wrong." He goes, "I'm a borrower, not a lender."
That's a good line.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
That's pretty good. Speaking of which, Ken, want to loan me 20 for tonight's Cal Neva tournament?
Yeah, no problem.
I need a bankroll.
I got you there.
All right,
there you go.
All right, let's head off for our next commercial break. When we come back, we'll jump into Wolfpack basketball, recap the San Diego State game.
Do we have to?
And get opinions on the Fresno game. And I did some research today. I did some research on what the Pack does against the spread.
Yeah, I saw that.
After a loss, and
I
kind of had a feeling before I started the research that it was going to be a good outcome. And the last 3 years, it's a fantastic outcome.
Playing against a team they hate is going to be good.
Yes. All right. With that being said, we're back after these messages on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the Windmill Sports Show. I'm your host, Kenny B. Make sure you like the show. Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. Josh Nagel to my right. You can get all his stuff at sportsline.com and follow him on Twitter at JoshNagel1.
Josh. Appreciate it, Ken. That is where you can find my stuff.
And you can find John the Hawk Stevens usually at Reds.
Leave
at Golden
me alone.
Eagle.
Leave me alone.
John doesn't like to share. So
except for the ladies. Hey, ladies.
Hello, ladies.
Hello, ladies.
Is that your Val Venus?
I'm the big Val Bosky.
The big Val Bosky. All right, let's talk a little bit. I'm getting my...
Speaking of wrestling, if Kofi Kingston does not get win the title at Fastlane, I'm never watching wrestling again.
All right, there you have it. Recap. Nevada goes into San Diego State on Wednesday. Nevada opened up as an 8.5 point favorite.
I think they just lost all the ladies with that.
Yeah, and they end up coming out, taking one on the chin. Josh and John, you know, 65-57 game went under. I actually posted that as one of my big plays on our Facebook page that day. Said, you know, I think San Diego State's going to come in there with a huge defensive effort, and I was pretty certain that the Pack was going to be able to match them defensively. The Pack just couldn't get anything going offensively. You know, scoring 57 points. You know, I'm looking at the stats and the way things went. You know, Jordan Caroline 8 points. You know, Caleb had ended up with 20, but
I've never seen Jordan Caroline struggle that way.
I haven't either, John. And you know, there was no supporting cast. You know, next to Caleb. You know, he scored 20, but you know, Jordan had 8. Trayshawn Thurman didn't score. Porter had 7. Gotten foul trouble again. You know, Cody Martin, 5 points. Jordan Brown had some really good minutes. You know, he's playing well.
Yeah,
I like
did.
The improvement we're seeing with him. You know, 6 points. Corey Henson, 6 points. And Jazz Johnson, 5 points. You know, Corey came out and hit a couple of big threes. You know, 2 for 3 from the three-point line. So, you know, it just philosophy, teams match up, you know, hostile environment. It's amazing, you know, the way Nevada matches up with San Diego State. You know, they end the year. Nevada has 5 games left, I believe, with the last game being here, you know, at Lawler versus San Diego State. Josh?
Yeah, Ken, that game the other night was reminiscent of the last couple of times they played San Diego State. It was just sort of a bizarre feeling you got early on. It's kind of funny because, like you, I like the under betted a little bit. But with the game, I'm like, you know, I might in-game this. I felt like taking the points was the right thing. But as well as Nevada's been playing, like, yeah, who knows? Let's make the decision in-game. And then as time went on throughout the first half, I just realized early on, I mean, this is going the same way. And I was even a little bit behind the curve, Ken, but I still thought it was a steal because, put it this way, 8 minute, I think it was the under 8 minute media timeout. San Diego State's up 8, and it's clear the way the game is going. And I fire up the app and see that San Diego State in-game money line is minus -115. I'm like, I'm sorry, that's stealing, you know. And you can just see it, minus -115 or minus -1.5. I'm like, I just wish I had gone all in, you know, emptied my account. I put a decent-sized bet on it, but I'm like, come on, there's no bigger value. You can see how this, you know, movie ends.
Great catch.
And some of the shots, and I know Nevada's recent history at San Diego State isn't very good, but I didn't even realize, and they have a great home record and whatnot, but that specific broadcast really keyed me in because they really showed some different, you know, views of the crowd or whatever. It really is like the Pit, though.
Oh, it is.
Think of it, it's cavernous, and then you look up, and it's like, no wonder teams struggled to play there. Why Nevada? I mean, I guess, you know, a lot of teams
struggled there, but Josh, they have chance.
Yeah.
When we were at the Mountain West Conference tournament last year, we watched San Diego State. There was so many San Diego State fans there. It was basically a home game for San Diego State when they beat Nevada, and it was they have chance. I mean, the crowd. I'm talking about the crowd, not Wolf Pack like we do. Full blown chance.
Yeah, and it was one of those things that was frustrating though, Ken, in terms of supporting Nevada. Similar to the New Mexico game, at least they never recovered. At least this one, they never got blown out too much. But it does seem like with the chips are down in that road environment, there was a certain lack of composure there. But with, I think one of you guys mentioned it on the Kenny B page that night, like there's something going on too. And again, not that you want to blame refs. And actually, there were so many charges in that game, it was bizarre.
Whew.
And Nevada got their share of calls in the second half. But it just seems like, particularly against San Diego State, when it starts kind of going downhill for them, you get that kind of thing too, where there's two plays in a row. Nevada player came in on the fast break, pretty clearly got clobbered, no call. And then, you know, the phantom soccer charge happens on the other end. One of our guys, you know, just takes a step back with the ball and there's a flop. And
yeah.
I mean, some of those things, it just compounds it, and then they're not playing well. But overall, again, seeing as teams get flustered down there, I mean, it's not like it's unforgivable, but to me it is concerning that Nevada is so good and so talented. I feel like they should be the type of team that can come out of there with a win. But they got flustered and never in the game.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, I kind of had a feeling it was coming. I wanted to think it was. San Diego State, they won 8 out of 9 now. And, you know, Brian Dutcher, the coach of San Diego State there, those comments weren't credited to him, but it was pretty clear that they were from him about Nevada and Coach Muss and all the style of basketball that we play. So I was hoping they were going to have a little chip on their shoulder and go down and handle business. But, like I said, Jordan Caroline, he did not look like himself. I think he's going to have a monster game tomorrow.
I agree with that because Fresno State's small inside.
They need help from Trayshawn Thurman. I think he hasn't been around. He just hasn't been a factor. He's missing layups. He's missing wide open threes, jump shots, and he's still contributing on the defensive end. But it just seems like he's the guy. He's the X factor. If he's going, I think that's a really big key for them. And of course, Jazz not hitting his shots was a big deal. I mean, that one late would have cut it to 4, I believe.
Yeah.
Right. So that who knows after that? So it's just one of those games.
Porter wasn't scoring in the post. Yeah. It could be spread around. It was kind of funny at the end when Caleb Martin got that dunk on Helmsley or whatever. That was a pretty sweet dunk and everything. Yeah. One, that was another thing, though. He pretty clearly got fouled. I mean, they're not going to call it with 5 seconds. Like, he got hit. Yeah. But secondly, there was, the stare down and everything. And, it's one of those deals where, it was nice to see Nevada finish with some resiliency. But, ultimately, it didn't mean that much because San Diego State still, held over.
It seems like Hemsley's been there since Tony Gwynn was there.
It's crazy. I was looking up some guys last night, too, because remember Pope, who didn't get drafted, Malik Pope.
Yeah.
I was wondering all their great players, but there's still some. But Hemsley, it's just because he was starting as like a freshman. He is a senior now. But some of the other guys, it was just a problem. I remember mentioning this last year, Matt Mitchell's a problem.
Yeah.
He was a freshman. And he's a sophomore now. The kid's built like a linebacker. Yep. He's got those huge, broad shoulders, really long arms.
He only had 8 points.
Yeah, but it's just weird, Ken, though. I think he had some steals and blocks, too, because he seems to – that kid – and I don't know why he always stands out to me, but he just does because he just puts his head down like a bull. It seems like he can get to the bucket whenever he wants, but he just is tenacious defensively also.
Yeah.
What are the numbers? Because I'm curious. It's funny you said that, but does he have anything that stand out in terms of steals, rebounds?
He had 9 boards.
He's still, he's a problem.
Yeah, so, going back to this game, you see the you see baseball arguments all the time with managers and umpires when they're in each other's face, Musk got into that official's face, and the fact that he did not get teed up in that, or maybe even immediately ejected. I mean, that's how aggressive it was. Kind of tells you a little bit. I think the official kind of thought, well, maybe we are missing a lot of calls. Mm-hmm. But like you said, John, a mature team like Nevada, they have to be able to overcome that adversity on the road.
You can't ever lead on that because it's just this year in particular. I don't know what it is. It just seems like the officiating is atrocious.
Horrible.
And I know that Nevada fans in general have a bad reputation for that at Lawler Event Center with the BS chants and the whining and moaning and everything. But I think it's justified this year. Every game we've gone to has just been an abomination.
And then Caroline finally scores, gets destroyed.
Yeah.
And then he gets up all fired up like, let's go, technical.
Yeah. Boom.
I mean, that was
seriously
a little quick trigger. Technical right there.
I'm surprised Caleb didn't get a technical for
after
the
he dunked,
stare
after,
down.
After he dunked on Helmsley.
Sherman Helmsley.
Yeah, so with that being said, Nevada has to bounce back tomorrow versus Fresno State. Nevada is at home tomorrow. And the number is, let me get to my sheet, Nevada is laying 12.5 points. Total's going to come in around 144. 12.5, 144 versus Fresno. And I was kind of looking at Nevada has – they have 5 games left. They have 3 home games, 2 road games. We have Fresno tomorrow.
Win.
We have UNLV on Wednesday.
Win by 30.
And then we go on the road for a 2-game set versus Utah State and Air Force.
Win by 3, win by 9.
And then come back home for the grudge match heading into the Mountain West Conference tournament.
Win by 27.
Versus San Diego State.
Just don't forget, I know that San Diego State's beat Nevada 3 straight times, but the Wolfpack absolutely dismantled them here last year.
With that being said, John and Josh, I talked a little bit about – I was curious what Nevada does games following losses. So I went back to – they have one loss this year. They came back. The following day, they played San Jose State. They laid 27.5 points. They beat San Jose State 92-53, so they covered the 27.5. Last year, they played they lost 6 games. They went 4-1-1 against the spread. So – their only loss was at the beginning, the Texas Tech TCU. They were +2, lose by 4. They were in that game. There was no line after the TCU last they lost. They played Radford. They won that game. But, the pack responds well. The year before that, they lost 6 games. They went 6-0 against the spread. So in the last 3 years, Nevada is 11-1-1 against the spread following a loss. Now, John, Fresno State's the perfect candidate to come in tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the perfect
candidate. It really is. It's also a scary proposition just with the athleticism that Fresno State does have. And they tend to play the Wolfpack pretty well. But I think it's a perfect storm for the Pack right now, Jordan Caroline in particular, to just go off.
Going back, the Pack played at Fresno State, John, earlier in the year. Pack picked up a road victory, 74-64. They were laying 9.5 in that game. They covered, it comes 10. And, John, going back to what you're saying about Caroline having a game, he went for 19-16 against them in Fresno. 19-16.
Yeah. That's what I expect. Maybe like a 25-point game out of him.
And, Ken, you mentioned Nevada's history of bouncing back after a loss. Yeah, kind of like what you mentioned with the total 144. There's been some adjustments on Nevada. I kind of like that over. You know, Fresno State, despite the last one going under, they tend to be more of an up-tempo team. But you know how they have the look-ahead lines. We've talked about you know, various games where you can bet at the sports book weeks in advance. I saw a look-ahead a couple weeks ago for the final weeks of the season. They had some involving Nevada. I bring this up because you mentioned the schedule. At Utah State, a couple of weeks back, the opening line was Nevada minus one.
Yeah.
So that goes to show you, of all the other Mountain West teams, the oddsmakers actually see Utah State as second best. That's the closest to a pick 'em. Look at all the road spreads, John. That's the closest one we've had.
Utah State losing does not help the Wolfpack. They have to get one of these quad one wins at some point. So you can't have Utah State slipping it up and losing games that they have no business losing. And then it's that type of stuff that then they can rise up and beat a team like the Wolfpack, and it's need them to win every other game besides the Wolfpack.
And Ken was talking before the show and sometimes during the break about Buffalo. It's a team we see all the time because they're a great team out of the MAC, and they're on CBS Sports Network and in the sports book all the time. And they're similar to Nevada in terms of, you know, the mid-majors starting to get some hype. They had a huge NCAA tournament run themselves last year. The upset, Arizona came back with a lot of their same players, and they have a similar record. I bring up the parallel because not only would it be a fun game to see on a neutral court, Nevada's got a lot more talent than Buffalo, but Buffalo probably has at least one future pro. But for comparison's sake, the MAC is a lot weaker than the Mountain West, and Buffalo's lost twice.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes to show you. I mean, they got blown out by a good Marquette team for the first time, but they're sitting there losing to Bowling Green or whoever once in a while. It just happens. So there's no shame in Nevada losing to a San Diego State team that was in the tournament last year. Did you guys hear what was going on the other night with the broadcasters after the
– Yeah.
We
have about 20 seconds before we have to go to
commercial.
You know
what I was going to say? The projections came out and they were in the top four. They're saying that loss drops them to like a sixth seed. They're saying that on the air.
That's crazy.
Come on.
You know, with that being said, I want to go over another one of the broadcasters after the game. I actually respected what he had to say, and I want to talk about that a little bit, and I want to go over the scores that Nevada had before the San Diego State game on Wednesday, and what a high clip they've been scoring at. So we'll go over that when we come back. So this is the time we have to head off a little bit early to traffic. So we'll come back after these messages on ESPN 94.5 FM. We're back at the Club Count Evo, right outside the Wimmeo Sportsbook, coming to you live on ESPN 94.5 FM. Make sure you download the Wimmeo Sports app at www.wimhill.us. Full-service sports back right at your fingertips. Make sure you follow Josh to it, JoshNagel1 on Twitter and at sportsline.com. Now, Josh, John's over at the bar getting some more beers. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, we recapped a little bit about the San Diego State loss, and now we have Fresno coming in tomorrow. And, you know, one of the things we talked about, this is a classic example, in my opinion, of we get an enormous effort out of the Pack. Pack already went on the road. They beat Fresno 74-64 earlier in the year. And it looks like from all indication, I'm seeing that this total is going to be about 144. Now, you know, going back, let's look at the Pack schedule before what happened in San Diego State. You know, probably, arguably, could be the best defensive pack has played all year, and they struggled a little bit, but now they're going to get to play Fresno State. Before the San Diego State game, the Pack scored 82, 91, 98, 93, 87, and 100. And now we go back to what we were talking about, what the Pack's done against the spread, 11-1 the last 3 years, 11-1-1 versus the spread the last 3 years. They get to come home. They get to be refocused. Five games left in the year. There's no sleeping now. Basically, in my opinion, and you guys, I'm certain that you agree, this is tournament basketball right now. The Pack is playing for seeding, moving forward. 144 is way too many. Pack's going to be in the high 80s tomorrow at home. Absolute high 80s, and they're going to do everything they can to get this bad taste out of their mouth.
You know, I agree, Ken. The first one, said the first meeting that they had in Fresno, that one went under, but it was a bizarre, you know, kind of a choppy flow to the game. It was 138 combined, and that went under. And it was just, I guess, Fresno State seemed like maybe they wanted to stay a little more in the half court. They thought maybe give them the best chance or whatever. But that game just had a choppy flow and some poor offense, and the Pack eventually pulled away. But as we were talking about during the break, not only does Nevada prefer the up-tempo, but if you look at Fresno State's recent results, they're that way as well. They seem to be at their best when their athleticism gets out in the full court. In most of their games in which they perform well, they're in the 80s also. So I would be stunned. Of course, anything can happen. You know, we say this and watch, you know, it could be 69, 65 or something. But I similarly think, you know, both teams, what you would need for this to go over, both teams at least clipping the 70 mark seems like a given to me.
I would think so. And I think we're pretty bullish on the fact that the Wolfpack's offense is going to show up and show up big. So 144 seems like a joke right now.
Absolutely. I told Josh, I'm going to be I have my William Hill mobile app. I'm going to start checking every 15 minutes right now. And as soon as the first line comes out, John, I'm making a substantial wager on the over in this game. Yeah. The only way this game does not go over is if somehow Fresno stays in the high 50s, low 60s. The only way it stays under. And then still, 80 to 64 puts you right on the number. I mean, I'm like you said, John. I've never seen anything like – you're right, John. If it truly opens, we're right, right now.
But that's a concern like the New Mexico game where, it went under by a few because the Lobos couldn't hold up their end of it.
But I guarantee you, Josh, like you said, this number's not going south. It's going north. If it opens at 144, it's going to close, like you said, minimally 146.5, 147.
I think so.
And then you can play back on the other side, and you're investing a little bit of money and maybe getting, 44, 45, 46.5. So you've got 45 – or 44 is a push, 45, 46 is a win. So, one side, two middles. If it goes to 47, you got two sides and two middles. So, if this number really opens, I don't think Nick's going to open at 144. I think he's going to come up a little bit higher. Like I said, the Pack bounced back games against the spread the last 3 years, 11-1-1 versus the spread. The one game they didn't cover was the back-to-back games when they played TCU and Texas Tech. The Battles were a two-point dog in that game, and they 84-80. It wasn't like, they got dismantled in that. If you want to go back to the – and I only really went – I went back all to Muss's entire tenure, but the first year – Muss inherited a program a little bit, and he was 5-3-1 in that year. If you go back to his entire career, he's six. The last 4 years, he's 16-4-2 versus the spread. But I kind of just take this team on. The last 3 years is basically what the current form of this team.
Oh, that makes sense. You're right. Kind of a first year mulligan with the inherited program.
Yeah. So and still, he went 5-3-1 after a loss in that year. So with that being said. Tip off tomorrow at 5 p.m. at Lawler. One of three remaining home games for the Wolfpack. Home on tomorrow versus Fresno State at 5 o'clock. Then they play Vegas on Thursday. That's a late game, John.
I believe so.
I believe it's a late game. Then they go on the road for two, then come back with the season finale versus San Diego State at home. All three games, I guarantee, are going to be sold out tomorrow as a wideout. John?
The dude's name's Turkus Ferguson.
That's a great name. Yes. Who's going to win this game tomorrow, John?
The Nevada Wolfpack.
Bye.
16 points.
16?
Yes.
And it goes over, right?
And it goes over. It's like a 85-69 type game.
Yeah. I can see that. I really can. I think we'll get a huge effort. This Wolfpack.
That was good math right there.
You got to get this bad taste out of their mouth. Josh?
Yeah, it's
packing over. Don't you hate to be a homer in a square?
Totally. And that's the thing, Ken. I actually don't like to lay the points. And despite all the stuff you mentioned, to me, though, it still seems like a little bit steep against a decent Fresno team. I would in a heartbeat right now. I would lay the points against UNLV and in the rematch with San Diego State. Tomorrow, still, that could be sticky. 13.5, 14 points, still a little uncomfortable for me. I may regret it, once they get there. But I'm just more so
values
on the argument we talked about with the total. More
values
so
on the side.
Over.
Values on the side. 100% values on the side. Excuse me, total. Excuse me. 100%
right.
The values
right.
on the total. Because, like I said, this is not going to close at 144.
And that's backdoorable. Like I said, Fresno State is a respectable team. And given what Nevada went through the other night, it's a relatively short turnaround. Expected to be focused and all that. But I don't think it's a guarantee that you just run away from Fresno State. Maybe if it was a real poor team, if it was San Jose State.
Yeah.
And so, for sure, the total's the play.
Fresno had some scores in game one. Nate Grimes went for 15 points. Deshaun Taylor went for 16, and Braxton Huggins went for 25. So they do have some firepower.
Braxton Huggins is a problem. Yeah.
And by the way, they were that wasn't a comfortable. It was like whatever. Nevada was -3.5, and it came 10, but that wasn't comfortable. I mean, it was close most of the way.
Yeah. And John, don't forget Wednesday.
Yeah. Wednesday,
we're retiring.
Nick Fizikas'
number. So come back.
About time.
At the Cal Nevas. You're putting his.
I'll retire
up?
It. All right. I'll have Big Nick down here, flew in from Japan. So, all right. With that being said, Josh, what else you got? Any bit you want to talk? What do you have for tomorrow, Josh? You have any college games that you just any huge matchups? Zion Williams, is Nike going to get sued over this?
No, who knows?
Not Tracy McGrady. Paul George should get sued because it's his signature shoe. So this is all Paul George's fault.
All right.
But there are a few that stand out, Ken. Well, tomorrow, Big 12 action. It plays into the title race big time. The Texas Tech-Kansas rematch. A couple weeks ago, Kansas blew them out in Lawrence, and now it's a rematch at Texas Tech. You're actually getting Kansas is +5. How often do you see the Jayhawks that big of an underdog in a Big 12 game? Kansas is +5 against Texas Tech. Ken, your Sooners tomorrow there. Oklahoma's -3 against Texas. I bring it out. Not because this is a huge game per se, but did you hear today?
Yes, I did.
Texas's best player.
Yep.
Yeah, Kerwin Roach, who's great.
Guard.
Yeah, he's a really good scorer. He's a good scorer and defender, suspended indefinitely for whatever reason. That's huge for them. Normally, I think Shaka Smart would have the edge, whatever, here. But without their best player on the court, you got to like the Sooners there a little bit.
What's the overnight number in that
three.
Game?
Three. Oh, Sooners minus three.
So it's obviously in Norman.
For sure, right. Yeah, they're home. Another big SEC game tomorrow that I like a little bit. LSU's hosting Tennessee. LSU's plus one. They actually just got upset by Florida the other night. You saw the game last week with Kentucky, the big showdown in Kentucky blew out Tennessee. I think it deflated Tennessee a little bit. They didn't look great. You know, the other night they played Vandy, you know, squeezed out that win. LSU, I think, gets them here. I think LSU might be the second best team in the SEC.
They're really athletic, really talented LSU. They're fun to watch.
That's crazy. People don't realize that. I'm sure Musselman and I don't know him well, but the kid at LSU, Will Wade, and Musselman was just there before he came to Nevada. I don't know if there's a connection there, but that guy, Will Wade, has to be a National Coach of the Year candidate. It's amazing what he's done.
Did Nevada just sign a fifth-year LSU player?
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did. Who does Duke play tomorrow? I think I know.
Syracuse.
Look at this game. Zion Williams.
Duke minus five.
Blows his tire, blows his knee, probably not going to play. Boeheim goes out and
kills somebody,
and he's going to coach.
Boeheim killed a guy.
Yeah, and so, I mean, John.
I saw that.
We go back to the lose your best player theory. I mean, don't you kind of just take Duke tomorrow?
Totally.
Yeah, I would think so. And
it's a revenge game.
I don't think Zion Williamson is – he looks like a generational talent, but I don't even think he's the best player on that team. I love R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish. That guy's a hell of a player, too. I think it's Duke all the way. And
well, there's one
that's
thing.
A horrible – what a sad deal for Boeheim. That's just –
it's
I'm
terrible.
No Boeheim fan. I can't stand that guy, but I feel really bad for him.
You know, he tested negative for any substances in his system.
Sure.
He passed all the field sobriety tests. And the initial report that I heard was there's going to be no charges following.
I would think not.
But going back to this five, the number five, you know, that what Duke is laying, there's a big difference between Duke playing North Carolina and in the first minute your best player going out and not being prepared for that to now – knowing that he's going to be out, coaching for that, and being ready for this game. This number's too light.
Again, North Carolina might have covered anyway, only because, hey, they're legitimately top 10 team themselves. They're ranked 8th in the country. There's always that rivalry flair. The teams are so motivated to get each other. North Carolina was probably going to be in that game anyway. They were finishing, you know, the fast break. Well, I mean, they were right there. And this one here, Ken, like you mentioned, a couple weeks ago, they were an afterthought. Duke was minus 17 at home against Syracuse. Got pushed to overtime and lost. So they had that revenge factor going in. I think the idea of a potential letdown with Williamson, John, has probably led to at least a 2-point discount in this spread.
Yes.
And I think Duke, even though Syracuse is sort of hard to separate from, given what did just happen to Boeheim and everything, it sets up as a flash. But, oh, and not to mention, sounds like it more even as we speak, because, you know, Syracuse blew out Louisville the other night. It was a nice win for them. They've been on the bubble. Syracuse needed, again, to kind of firm up their NCAA tournament bid. Big win for them. This is a flat spot, and people thinking Duke might be, you know, a little bit hampered with that loss. I think Duke covers that one.
I agree. No, I absolutely agree. What else you got, Josh?
And, yeah, and like you said, you know, speaking to Boeheim, and you don't want that to happen to anybody, but, yeah, that guy.
He doesn't. Nobody.
As time goes on, though. John and I talked about this before the show. I said, Ken, it's all preliminary. You know they drew blood for him. He might have passed a breathalyzer. And I don't know. Obviously, it's blizzard-like conditions on the freeway. Maybe he did nothing wrong, but I'll just throw this out there now. We may not have heard the end of that story yet. Yeah. You have Kentucky minus 7 over Auburn. Again, Auburn was great earlier in the year. Kentucky's been playing lights out lately. That could be a trap spot. Auburn's really good.
Auburn is really good. SEC, this is as good as that conference has been.
I agree.
While.
They've been down.
Alabama's
remember?
Good.
For the longest time, John, it was just Kentucky
Florida's
and
good.
Everyone else. You're lucky if somebody, you have the SEC runner-up got in, like the Pac-12's looking this year.
Yeah.
SEC top to bottom is really strong this year.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's we're trying to go through this grocery receipt to get the games on it. We talked about Georgetown the other night blowing out Villanova. The way they've trended lately, John, what do you think? Though tomorrow, though, they're 5.5-point dogs at Creighton. So far this year, Georgetown, this would be a play against spot after a big win.
It would be time. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's the consistency is something the Hoyas do not have. So, yeah. But it's a good night. You know, it's bad as a I root for Georgetown. I root for North Carolina. So that was good. And then the Wolfpack ruined my night. But
yeah,
I used up all my mojo on the first two games.
You have Virginia minus 4.5 at Louisville. To me, right now, Louisville's a team. Ever since the Duke debacle, I don't know how to judge them. Like, normally, they've matched up pretty well in years past with Virginia.
Yeah.
But now I don't know. Like, you know, do the Cardinals come out with a big win, or Virginia, after losing to Duke twice, they've been clamping down lately. So that's a tough one.
Virginia is just such a different animal than any other team out there that it's take your luck when you're betting against a team that plays that kind of defense. That's never something I want to do. So you can have Louisville all you want. I'll take the Cavs.
All right, Josh, hold that thought. When we come back, we'll continue handicapping baseball and talk a little bit more about Wolfpack basketball tomorrow. Big game.
Giants baseball tomorrow. Giants baseball. Everybody else, too, but Giants baseball.
All right.
There you go, Borders.
Be back after this message on ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the last segment of the William Hill Sports Show. Coming to you live from Club Count Evo on ESPN 94.5 FM. I'm your host, Kenny B. Once again, here with Josh Nagel, John the Hawk Stevens. Make sure you like the show at Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. Miracle on Ice. Did you guys, 39-year anniversary of the Miracle on Ice.
Sweet. I do believe in miracles, if you're going to ask.
So one of our listeners, Jesse James, actually texted me that and said, make sure you announce that. So he's all fired up about it. So with that being said, Josh, what are the college hoops you got?
Okay, and a couple more tomorrow. Let's mention, again, the numbers just released are kind of diving in looking for, you know, the hidden gems or whatnot. But as we often see, and to me, college basketball is such a reliable thing. You can, you know, unless a team, even the most experienced, resilient teams fall into this, and that is, you know, the downside after a huge win. Remember, we all did this with New Mexico after they beat Nevada and then just got blown out three games in a row. We know San Diego State's better than them, but I wonder tomorrow, Ken, when you look at the San Diego State's minus 1.5 at UNLV out of pure principle.
Isn't that amazing?
Do you just fade the Aztecs? I do.
Listen to this. San Diego State's going to UNLV laying 1.5. What was the pack laying at UNLV?
9.5. Well, I said, believe me, we're talking about San Diego State's loss to Air Force. I mean, they again, look at their resume. You wouldn't be terribly, you know,
impressed.
Blown away. Right.
Yeah.
Just one of those things. Another one, Ken, tomorrow, Gonzaga. It's like there's no bigger gap, right, between Gonzaga and the rest of the West Coast Conference than any other team in the country against BYU, which I firmly believe is the second-best team in that conference, not San Francisco. BYU's plus 20. 20-point underdog.
That's unreal.
The top two teams in the country are in the country in that conference, and one of them is laying 20?
I really wish they would have come to the Mountain West. That would just be good for everybody.
Going back to the Wolfpack.
Except for them.
Going back to the Wolfpack loss, and Joshua, while you're looking at that, you know, since we're talking college basketball, you know, the announcers after the game, you know, I thought it was going to just be all doom and gloom and all just throwing darts at Nevada. You know, Nevada's taking the brunt of all this, you know, on social media, this loss at San Diego State. But one of the guys, I'd never seen him before. I wish I knew who it was, but he said, you know, he goes, there's nothing to worry about here, guys. He goes, think about a guy like Seth Curry that shoots 94% from the free throw line. He misses a free throw every once in a while. This is just a missed free throw for Nevada. They're going to get – there's nothing to worry about. There's nothing to worry about. You know, he goes, they had a bad game. The other thing that bothers me is when you get all the critics on social media saying, well, why are they shooting so many threes? Listen, they're 23-1. That's their game. Yeah. I mean, are we supposed to change our identity? You know, and I was talking to Tommy about this today. I said, well, if they've missed four in a row – I want them jacking a three because they're due to hit some threes.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, everything, the law of averages out. So I don't buy into the, well, they should all of a sudden go into half court set because they're not hitting threes. They just weren't falling. I mean, there's no urgency, you know, fans. This team right now is having the greatest season in Nevada basketball history.
Yeah.
One, they're being compared to possibly the greatest team ever to play in the Mountain West Conference. Don't give up on this team. Don't ridicule these kids. They're busting their butts for us. And come out and support them in these last three home games. It just aggravates me to know when to listen to these armchair coaches saying they need to stop jacking the three. That's what they do. You know, well, how come we're not getting offensive rebounds? Because we're releasing early because we want to create tempo and pace.
The one thing I will say about this loss in particular is it's a little disconcerting just because this is now a pattern. This has happened three straight times against that team.
Okay.
The New Mexico, you can see, yeah, that's just a little blip on the radar. But it's kind of a pattern now with San Diego State, and that's disconcerting to me at least.
Yeah, you know, the post-game interview, they were talking about, you know, to one of the Aztec players, and they asked him, what, you know, he goes, we just want it more than them. He goes, that's it. He goes, that team's a monster. He goes, you got to want it. He goes, we just want it more than them. That's what he said.
And if you watch the game unfold, there's just a different level, though. I don't know what it is, and you know the Wolfpack that brings it out in San Diego State. But again, most of the year, similar to last year, San Diego State's going nowhere. They don't even have an NIT worthy resume. They're going to have to win the Mountain West tournament again to get in, and they might. But just something about Nevada brings that out in them, where they just do. There's a level of intensity that they did have an edge on with Nevada. And by the way, the commentator, I think it was Steve Lapis, right? Who's really good.
Maybe yeah. he's the older guy, on the far left?
He's the older, dignified former Villanova
yes.
coach.
It was Pete Gillen.
He's a very good. It wasn't Pete.
It wasn't Pete.
It was.
Oh,
Lapis,
this
for sure,
was Lapis. That's exactly.
And so,
right.
And he's very
I
good.
A lot of
keeping the perspective. He's a good analyst.
I gained a lot of respect for that guy and what he was saying, you know, because everybody else, all the other pundits want to, you know, pile on Nevada. You know, go back to shooting the three, John and Josh. Jazz Johnson had a wide open three down seven. If that goes, it cuts it to a four-point game.
Yep.
The game changes. Listen, shots don't fall. I want Jazz taking that shot every time.
People don't respect, for whatever reason, the way that Musselman's gone about building these teams. I don't know why. One's better than the other. Obviously, you would want to build a high school team and go from there. But in the situation with Muss's plan to get to where they are, how could you fault that at all?
Ever.
I don't get
ever.
It.
I mean, it goes back to these people trying to tell Muss how to beat the zone.
I know.
It's a joke. This team has two losses. I mean, what are we supposed to?
Everybody's an expert. I remember watching Barry Bonds in his prime, and he let this ball just go right down the pipe, and I'm like, what the hell is this guy doing?
Yeah.
And I'm telling Barry Bonds
how to hit. Which goes back to my Alex Rodriguez story. We're in Arizona.
Yeah.
You know, you remember that story?
Remember, yeah.
We're playing softball in Arizona. We happen to be staying at the same hotel that the AAA, they're having spring training, and they had some of the younger guys there, and we're out on the deck or the balcony drinking beers and talking, and so we start BSing, and we say, who's your best player? And he's not even with us. He goes, it's that guy in there. And so we walk in the room, the door's open, he goes, hey, what's up? And he's laying on the bed, and he's got the baseball tied to the surgical hose, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And he's got, you know, around his foot, and he's watching TV, SportsCenter or something, and just doing exercise, you know, grabbing the ball, you know, hey, what's going on? And, you know, hey, what's going on with that guy? I go, what position does that guy play? And he goes, he's a shortstop. I go, how tall is he? What was he like?
6'3".
I go, he's too big. He'll never make it a shortstop. He needs to find a different position. I told Alex Rodriguez that he needed to find a different position because he couldn't play shortstop because he was too big. John was there.
Yeah, it's that was a miss.
Certain miss. My second miss, LeBron James.
Yeah, well.
I'm not a very good evaluator of young talent.
I thought that the Patriots would sell high and keep Drew Bledsoe, sell Brady. After the first Super Bowl, so
yeah.
They're not all gems.
So, with that being said, don't get down.
But I also said we should hire Eric Musselman in about 2011 on this very radio show.
So, Muss is staying. I think we get another year out of Muss. I really do. You know, and this team is playing their hearts out and continue the hard work, guys. Believe me, don't listen to all their critics, and you guys keep doing exactly what you're doing. He gets you guys in the right spots to take the right shots, and, you know, sometimes.
You're not all worried about UCLA?
Not at all. Not at all. I've read multiple.
Arizona worries me too.
Yeah, that
what
one.
What about Cal again?
No, I don't think so.
They're going to be in the market though.
I know.
I don't think so.
Cal's a step down.
Yeah, I think so too.
Arizona, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Jay Johnson leaving after such a fabulous year, the baseball coach. You can't fault Jay Johnson
for going to
U of A.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, I've read a couple articles about the coaching vacancies at UCLA, and you know. The two articles I read, they're not even really – he's a long shot,
yeah.
Dark horse. He's not even – they're number one.
I heard Jay Billis talking about the situation, and he mentioned Mark Fox leaving all those years ago to go to Georgia, and he said that's something Nevada never has to worry about anymore, is going to an also-ran big top conference.
Yeah.
It's top job or nothing. He's not going to go to
I agree with that,
Georgia. He's not going to go to Minnesota, anything like that, even though, you know, he has the roots up there. It's better now that we have to. You can cross off a lot of those schools from the list, but Arizona, UCLA scare the hell out of me.
Yeah, I see Arizona, and that's possible. Maybe that's possible, but I just don't think he's going to UCLA.
Right. The Arizona thing's particularly a concern now because they're probably not going to the NCAA tournament this year, and they're kind
of that.
They're kind of fed up with the whole Sean Miller era there.
Them losing out on Jordan Brown They didn't see that
if
one.
If you look at them, Arizona is really not good at all.
At all.
That's why, you know, they beat Cal last night. It's congratulations. They lost like what, 7 in a row before that.
Big game tomorrow, guys. We're talking about it. Nevada tips off versus Fresno State at 5 p.m. at Lawler. You know, it's a sold-out whiteout. It's a whiteout. So if you're going to go down and make sure that we got our must-bust shirts today, our white must-bust shirts, you know, we'll be down there cheering on the pack and continuing to back the pack. 5 games left, 3 home games. You know, they chant 3-3-3. I actually put that on Chris Murray's mailbag last Monday. You know, I said, you know, they chant 3-3-3 at the end of every huddle. And I kind of had an idea of what it meant, but he actually 100% clarified it. You know, the first three is, let's win our third consecutive Mountain West regular season title.
Yep.
The second three is, let's win 3 games in the Mountain West Conference Tournament.
Yep.
That would make them conference tournament champions. And then the third three is, let's make it to the third weekend of the NCAA tournament, which would put them in the
Final Four.
So the 3-3-3, hashtag 3-3-3, it's time. You know, we still control our own destiny. You guys, we wouldn't be disappointed. Neither of you two gentlemen would be disappointed if we were sitting here in this spot right now saying the Pack only has 2 losses.
No. Not at all, Ken, but it just goes to show you. They said when people come out and start with the armchair criticism or the Twitter critics or whatnot, it just goes to show you what degree of spoiled the Nevada fan base has become. If you're going to get, you know, upset, like I said, one of the few teams in the country with even 2 losses. The only thing, you know, to me that was concerning is, like I said, there's a little bit of it's the lack of resilience. Obviously, if they came back and won, you know, it wouldn't be a loss. So you're like, what are you talking about? But it's just the 2 losses we do have, it just seemed like the resilience wasn't there in terms of, you know, they got down. I just didn't like the composure on Nevada's part. Yeah. But it's not like I'm going to, you know,
When you play 30-plus games, that happens. Would you be more comfortable?
That's a good point. And let's look at Boise State. That was a losable, the first one.
Yeah, that's true.
That was a losable game. And we've talked about that where I felt like all those similar circumstances, I thought the calls were going bad and the play wasn't great, and they pulled it out.
Nevada Wolfpack fans, listen, and honestly, got a question. We only got about 30 seconds. Would you feel more comfortable if Nevada was undefeated right now? I wouldn't.
No.
No.
Exactly.
Yep.
So these guys are going to get refocused.
We're talking about Duke's got 3 losses. Everyone's, you know, losing
That's
games.
That's my point. But, you know, we had the best record in the NCAA before that toast stubbing at San Diego State. So back the pack, 5 p.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, versus UNLV at home. Retiring Nick Fizikas' number. Bet the pack game over tomorrow, over the 144. 15 seconds, John. You got any parting shots?
Baseball season's here.
What? Nick and those guys have a bunch of their props. Follow Josh on Sportsline.
Hey, Bryce, sign with the Giants.
All right. See you next week. ESPN, 94.5 FM.
Thanks for joining us for the William Hill Sports Show. Be sure to tune in again next Friday at 5 p.m. for all the action. This is KUUB Sun Valley, ESPN Radio 94.5.